Welcome to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. My name is Fergal Bann. Join me as I speak to senior business leaders building sustainable value chains across a wide range of industries. We explore key questions related to the drive to sustainability, from procurement to the role of technology and innovation, regulatory pressures and labor standards, transparency and risk management. We explore what is working, the latest thinking, and identify key lessons and insights.
I'm very pleased today to welcome Alexandra Del Valle to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast. Alexandra is the VP of Supplier Sustainability at CBRE, the world's largest commercial real estate services and investment firm, where she leads innovative programs aimed at enhancing sustainable procurement across a global and diverse supplier network. So thank you so much for joining me today, Alexandra, on the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. Now, I'm really looking forward to discussing your work on sustainable procurement at CBRE. Before we dive in, could you set the stage a little and tell us a bit about CBRE for those who may not be familiar, and also your role in shaping sustainable procurement strategies?
Yeah, sure. Glad to do that. So CBRE Group, for those of you who might not know, is the world's largest commercial real estate services and investment firm. We lead in leasing, property sales, property management, and what we call occupier outsourcing and valuation. And we do that through a number of subsidiaries and partnerships globally. We're quite a large company with more than 130,000 employees globally. And we serve our clients in the real estate and investor sectors and occupier sectors in more than 100 countries. Quite a broad organization. My role sits within the CBRE Global Procurement Team. I hold the role of VP Supplier Sustainability. And our team sits in what we call the CBRE platform, which is a centralized group of functions such as, you know, people, sustainability, procurement, corporate responsibility, so on and so forth, and other disciplines. My team is responsible for three main programs. We have our sustainable procurement program, which we're aiming to increase the proportion of sustainable management practices along our supply chain. And we're looking to do that both in our own operations and along our suppliers' operations. So internally, we're partnering with our global procurement colleagues, and we're adapting our processes to integrate sustainable practices in our own way of buying and procurement and supply chain activities. And externally, we aim to understand our suppliers' sustainability maturity. We offer collaboration opportunities, and we look to develop them where we can. Our second program is our Carbon Trace program. This is our supply chain decarbonization program, which does what it says on the tin effectively, and we'll get into that into more detail later today, I believe. And our third program is our ESG governance and reporting for the supply chain. We work very closely with our corporate sustainability team. We support them in voluntary and regulatory disclosures relating specifically to our global supply chain. And like many companies, we're actively looking at the impacts of the evolving landscape, specifically the CSRD and CSDDD requirements.
Now, sustainable procurement is more critical than ever as businesses face growing pressures, not only to meet environmental and ethical standards, but also to innovate and build resilience in their supply chains. Can you explain what some of the key drivers were behind CBRE's sustainable procurement strategy and how this strategy has evolved over time?
Yeah, sure. So our supply chain, maybe a couple of order of magnitude figures, we've got over 131,000 suppliers, which we worked with in 2023, and about 2,600 of them were identified as pretty significant suppliers, and another 5,000 were identified as material to some of our sustainability issues. So just to give you orders of magnitude from the beginning, we have thousands of suppliers that we need to engage with from a sustainable procurement strategy perspective. We've been integrating our sustainable management practices gradually over the last 15 years. If we go back significantly a couple of years back in 2007 was our first corporate responsibility report. And we were already including a focus on multinational sustainability initiatives back then. We're looking at standing up policies to demonstrate our commitment to environmental stewardship effectively. And then at the request of a growing number of customers over time, now in the hundreds, we've been assessed as a company by EcoVadis since 2014 and demonstrating how we're integrating sustainable management practices in our business. And we're very proud to be holding a gold medal based on our last assessment. So developing solutions to support our clients' sustainability goals and consequently integrating those practices along our own supply chain to enable those sustainable solutions. This came as a natural extension of CBRE's evolution over time, effectively. And so when we consider about how this evolved, if we looked at, you know, we are integrating good actions in our business for years, we then looked to stand up formally a sustainable procurement capability in 2018, following a reorganization, if you will, in the global procurement function. And that reorg brought together some procurement operations and procurement technology roles under the same leader. So my predecessor, Matt Langley, had established key business relationships internally to support the development of our initial sustainable procurement technology roadmap. And one of the first steps that our team took was to establish a consolidated spend view, bringing together data from over 65 regional disparate sources into one central location.
Right, right. Now, very, very interesting. Now, you've touched on a few key points already, but can you highlight a couple of significant milestones that mark turning points or important developments in your sustainable procurement journey?
Sure. So, I mean, getting our spend into one place was the beginning. Then we started to think about how can we effectively overlay our understanding of our supply chain from a spend perspective with the sustainability information that is accessible to us in the EcoVadis network. So we carried out this initiative to help us establish effectively two KPIs against which we wanted to report on a regular basis, which is the first KPI is the degree to which our suppliers are integrating sustainable management practices in their operations. We call this our sustainable spend metric, and effectively it does, you know, what we said. We overlay spend with EcoVadis scores per supplier and get a proportional view of what our supply chain looks like. And then parallel to that, we're also trying to understand the extent to which suppliers are able to demonstrate the use of diverse suppliers in both their tier one and their tier two relationships. And so really we're trying to establish a data focus. And this data focus enabled us to garner credibility with both our clients and also our internal leaders and stakeholders, and allowed us to integrate the sustainable procurement function into more formal company governance in areas as important as, for example, sustainable financing. So that was in 2019. Then in 2020, as a company, we obtained a validation from the SBTi on our near-term net zero target, which includes a reduction of our scopes 1 and 2 in absolute terms and an intensity reduction on CBRE's scope 3 emissions. And so we had to launch several strategies internally to meet these targets, initially focused on developing these really more sophisticated sustainability solutions for our clients because our downstream emissions are very significant. However, including scope 3 into our net zero target means we also needed to look at upstream. And we know that a lot of companies have not started looking at their scope 3 upstream as well, because that means working with your suppliers. And we see that that's what happens when you start looking at including supply chain emissions into your net zero targets. It leads to these really fascinating discussions internally in an organization about how can we best utilize our resources to decarbonize our upstream scope 3. So that's when in 2022 at CBRE, we officially kicked off market research to help us to solve for two very important problems concurrently. The first was, how do we collect reliable emissions data from our suppliers? We know this is complex. And the second was, how do we enable our suppliers to decarbonize their own supply chain? We needed to cascade this down. And so that's the initiative that led to the creation of our Carbon Trace program.
Right. Now, before we dive deeper into the Carbon Trace program, I'd like to focus on something you mentioned earlier, understanding procurement spend. Can you walk us through how you approach this and what impact this has had on shaping your procurement strategy?
Yeah. So I mentioned our journey kind of started back in 2018, and it was really evident to our team at that time that we couldn't really get our head around some of the big sustainability issues if we didn't have a holistic and centralized view of all of our supplier relationships and spend. So this digital core that we built is a combination today of BI data consolidation and effectively spend cleansing processes. And that's what enabled us to gain visibility into our spend patterns. So we've done a lot of work, and we continue to do a lot of work around what we're calling our spend normalization. So this is getting the data in a format where we can compare apples to apples as much as possible. For example, spend booked as janitorial services in the US could be booked as service de nettoyage in France. And we need to be able to consolidate all of that. And this consolidation is achieved thanks to a very close collaboration we have with our global procurement analytics team. So once we have the ability to get that consolidation view, we can aggregate and disaggregate data at global, regional, or different levels, such as the country or account level. And this has proven to be really critical and a value add also to our stakeholders and to our clients, because not only are we able to look at orders of magnitude, but we also have the ability to drill down into a particular business segment or region or client as needed. So we can then overlay this information with all the sustainability data from the EcoVadis platform, and it provides us with a view of that proportion of our supply chain that meets a good threshold in terms of sustainable management practices. And how that's played a role in kind of shaping our strategies and initiatives in the future is that without having this kind of single source of truth or this order of magnitude view, we'd be stuck in a really inefficient pattern. We'd be looking at sustainability initiatives only at the regional level or at the country level. And this could have confused some of our multinational suppliers, and it could have, you know, just made things inefficient for ourselves, exposing our teams and our suppliers to potentially contradictory goals or initiatives. So while, like many companies, our processes aren't perfect today, we believe that you really need to have this centralized and holistic level of data to enable really best practice sound supplier performance management processes. We really want to be able to lay the foundation with our suppliers, anchor where we need to go to a roadmap, and support our suppliers in achieving their goals.
Let's shift to your carbon trace program, a key part of your sustainable procurement efforts. Can you tell us what led to the creation of this program, and tell us a bit about how it's evolved over time? What were some of the early challenges, and how have you adapted the program over time?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for going. We viewed it as a second step, if you will, because we felt that we'd gained an initial view of our suppliers' maturity through EcoVadis assessments overlaid with their spend data. And so we already had a view of where some of the gaps were in our supply chain. But then when we started looking at our own net zero pathway, there were some pretty big hurdles that appeared to us that we felt that we needed to solve for. So the first was, we felt we really needed to move fast. How could we help our suppliers to quickly improve their capabilities, specifically around emissions management? And then how could we make sure that we were focusing on the right priorities to meet our net zero pathway? Actually, there's probably a third thing that we tried to solve for at the beginning, because we were seeing repeated requests from our clients to get access to emissions data and integrate some of those solutions into their real estate supply chains. And so we were trying to solve for all three of those things at the same time. So if we think about this first challenge around supplier emissions capabilities, this was highlighted to us actually through some research that we looked at that was carried out by EcoVadis, and it actually in parallel by the CDP in about 2021. And it really showed us that the majority of the suppliers in any company's supply chain is actively not decarbonizing. So, you know, we needed to really help our suppliers. The second challenge around focusing on the right priorities, we felt needed to be answered kind of into different phases. So we asked ourselves, well, how many suppliers do we need to engage with to meet our net zero pathway? So you and your listeners may be aware that the SBTi guidance states that emissions should be abated by 90% by the target date before any offsets could be applied. So we were looking at how many of our suppliers contribute to 90% of our supply chain emissions. And just doing some math, we came to the conclusion that we needed to engage with probably around 7,500 suppliers and encourage them all to decarbonize by 2040. And so this was like a scale issue that we needed to solve for. We knew this kind of engagement couldn't happen overnight. So that's why we built a 3-year engagement strategy. And I was talking about the third challenge around the clients' requests. We really needed to find a way to answer our clients' requirements. And so we thought, well, you know, if we can help our suppliers to decarbonize and engage with a number of them, we can help to solve for our clients' challenges as well by implementing these aspects into our sustainable procurement ways of working.
So how many suppliers have you engaged with so far, and what's the trajectory look like moving forward, Alexandra?
Yeah, so right now we're in year 2, if you will, of our 3-year engagement strategy. So we kind of worked backwards from 2025. We wanted to make sure that our most material suppliers were aware of, you know, the path forward no later than 2025. So, and as we have thousands of suppliers with whom we needed to engage, we built a gradual engagement plan. So for example, last year we had the target to engage with 1,000 suppliers. This year we've added on 2,000 suppliers effectively for a total of 3,000 suppliers to be engaged by the end of this year. And next year we're going to more than double our engagement and add on 4,500 more suppliers into our program, which would, you know, mathematically and nicely get us to our target of engaging with 7,500 suppliers by the end of next year. And in addition to having targets around the numbers of suppliers engaged, which was what we started off our program with, we've kind of pivoted because we've seen the importance of including targets around the quality and the volume of data that we've collected from our suppliers. It kind of seems obvious, but we're really seeing it now in the data. And so, you know, we really bring our suppliers through 5 simple steps in this program. We start off with screening where they're at. We then engage on targets and understanding their plans. We then enable them to calculate. We then review the data and the quality with them. And then we bring it together through a big picture and start to position those decarbonization actions. And yeah, we really try to look at how we ingest our suppliers according to their relative maturity, which we don't always know from the onset, but that's the way that we are approaching the program for the moment.
Now, unlike, say, a manufacturing company, which typically has a supply base with a relatively narrow direct spend on purchased materials and processing for resale, CBRE has a more challenging supply chain topography, a more diverse and decentralized supplier base. Can you briefly explain the challenge and how did you prioritize and collaborate with suppliers to implement your sustainable procurement strategy?
Yeah, that's a really crucial point. So we are a company who heavily relies on service providers. We don't buy any raw materials or components that we then transform into something else in a production process, right? So we're buying things like equipment for heating, ventilation, aircon, or equipment for security or other, you know, electric vehicle charging stations, those kinds of things. All that equipment, we also need to consider spare parts to service this equipment over time. So there's some components there, but we'll buy some finished products that we use in our own operations, like, you know, uniforms or IT products, et cetera. But we also outsource some of these activities in some cases. And so our supply chain is effectively mostly service providers. Sometimes building materials that we could be using in developments or projects can be bundled into general contracting relationships as well. So all of these service providers themselves form a globally decentralized supply chain. We have a high proportion of small businesses as well in our supply chain. And our smaller companies tend to be selected because they're offering, you know, the best option for a particular site that has, you know, local requirements because of where they're situated. The example I like to always give is this, you know, for example, there's no sense in putting together a national deal on cleaning services and then flying cleaners in from San Francisco to New York, right? We need to have solutions that we deploy quite locally. So we work with a lot of smaller local companies, even sometimes they are part of global multinationals. So we have a broad makeup in our supply chain. So this really high proportion of service providers in our supply chain meant that we couldn't take the actions that we hear that the manufacturing companies are taking. So, you know, they're saying, we need you to share your product carbon footprint with us for this particular product or environmental product data sheets, EPDs right off the bat. So we had to take a different strategy and leverage for what we felt was the next best form of primary supplier data. This is important in emissions management. And we aimed for obtaining a supplier-specific emissions intensity number or ratio, if you will, from our suppliers. And the challenge was that in order to generate this data, a company, any company, needs to be able to calculate their own company-wide emissions and effectively divide that by their revenue for the same activity period. And we thought about leveraging publicly available information, but we quickly came across a number of some pretty big challenges.
Effective data collection is essential, but this can be a significant challenge, especially when dealing with suppliers with varying levels of maturity and differing approaches to emissions reporting. How did you overcome these challenges and ensure reliable, consistent data across your supply network?
Yeah, so we thought about, well, what are we trying to solve for effectively? We looked at our experience and we saw that there was 3 different profiles, if you will, or company profiles when it came to emissions. We saw that there were companies who were like ahead of the game and they were publicly reporting all emissions categories, meaning scope 1, 2, and all 15 categories of scope 3 emissions. But the challenge there was that these companies weren't necessarily following the same methodology, and the quality of the reported data varied greatly. Then there was a second group of companies who were only internally reporting some of their emissions categories. It means they weren't feeling confident to share it enough externally, or they strategically decided not to. So this meant that not all of their emissions information was publicly available. And so we'd have at best an incomplete view of how they were managing their emissions in their company if we relied on publicly available information. And then finally, there were companies who were not yet reporting all of their emissions. So whether internally or externally, it means they had like a gap in emissions management capabilities. So they still needed to develop capabilities. And what we didn't always know, because obviously some activities are occurring, internally, is which of our suppliers fall into which of these buckets. And this was a really important aspect of our supplier engagement strategy. So we devised our supplier engagement model through CarbonTrace that enabled our suppliers to jump into the process regardless of where they were on the maturity scale. So we didn't need to screen everybody before. We strategically basically aimed to provide them, regardless of their maturity, really, you know, good value for participating in our program. And some of the value that they would get was either access to free emissions management capabilities, which we invested in, or access to benchmarking to help, you know, reassure them on the trajectory that they were already on.
Can you tell us how your sustainable procurement program supported CBRE's broader net zero supply chain product? What impact has this had on your strategy globally? And how do you train your teams?
Yep. Okay. So basically, we realized that when we were sharing our sustainable procurement programs with our clients, it became evident to us that our clients wanted to see transparency of supply chain emissions, and they wanted to understand more around decarbonization action plans. So this was an opportunity for us to also accelerate our clients' net zero pathways. It's kind of the questions that came up in the conversation. So we felt that it was really important to show our clients that we could, through our methodology, effectively decouple business growth from emissions growth to help our clients meet their net zero goals. And this concept is really important. The decoupling is necessary to drive decarbonization actions down the supply chain. So we help our clients get progressive sub-tier transparency of emissions through supplier engagement. And we also provide our clients with reassurance that the emissions data that's used follows our standardized methodology and meets our data quality requirements. So how it impacted our program's global deployment was that, as you can imagine, we needed to find some funding to be able to develop these capabilities at scale. So, you know, we shifted our business case beyond looking at only our own operations to focus our stakeholders on the commercial opportunity that was linked to the network effect, effectively, of building decarbonization capability in our supply chain. And so this allowed us to start having internal conversations, thinking more strategically about our own capabilities and having the right resources and crucially partnerships in place. So we considered which resources we needed to keep in-house and which we could outsource. And ultimately, the aim was to provide our clients with access to our capabilities and learnings, all the while and making sure that they were, you know, getting services that were tailored to their own situation. For example, our net zero trajectory might be different than our client's net zero trajectory. So yes, you asked about training. There was a lot of training efforts that were needed. We did receive incredible support from our product development team, headed up by Rob Burns, who not only program managed our product development efforts, but also made sure that we had access to the right stakeholder groups to push knowledge of our net zero supply chain product across the organization and generate the appetite for our team to position this solution in their client conversations. And so we developed in-house no less than 5 different education modules. We covered everything from the basics, which is like, what are greenhouse gas emissions and why does my client care, to more like formal collateral, such as, you know, product overview and how to pitch it. We also gave our colleagues access to deeper knowledge layers, such as understanding more about how to integrate sustainability as an innovation opportunity in your business conversations. And even we built some content around supplier testimonials so they would understand what the supplier experience was. And we were really grateful to have the opportunity to showcase our net zero supply chain product internally. We have a product week every year. And my team provided a demo of the dashboard that we've developed to enable on-demand client-specific reporting. And this hard work enabled us to have really collaborative conversations about, you know, real estate supply chain decarbonization with many of our clients. And that allowed us to really show more stickiness, right? And add more value to our overall relationship with our clients.
Now, reflecting on your journey so far, what are some of the key lessons learned? What advice would you offer to other companies looking to embark on a similar sustainable procurement path?
Yeah, so we all spend, I hope, some time interacting with our peers in sustainability procurement or just in sustainability realms. And the conversation that I hear coming up a lot is, you know, how do we just integrate sustainability into our way of working? And yeah, that's definitely the North Star that we should all be aiming for, which ultimately means kind of working ourselves out of a job. But I think that that's a huge achievement. In order to properly and successfully integrate sustainability into our business operations, I think we need to productively influence our stakeholders, both internally and externally. So I think the most important lesson learned is that we can't afford to go it alone. We need to be cultivating those relevant stakeholder relationships. It's not always easy to do, but we need to focus on opening those doors so that we can get the time and the opportunities to help our peers and our stakeholders to, you know, see the challenges of not integrating sustainability into the way of working. You know, you could be losing clients, you could be facing penalties if you're not aligning to the new regulatory requirements. But we should also be opening those doors so that we can see the opportunities of successful sustainability integration into our operations. So that could be gaining access to leading innovation from our partners, and then the ability to uniquely package those solutions to meet our clients' needs. So that would be the lesson learned piece. And I guess my advice would be to seek to think about a long-term impact-based vision when it comes to sustainable procurement, and think of ways to accelerate attaining that vision by looking at all the opportunities that you could avoid from having to set anything up from scratch. So let me explain this a little bit more. What I mean by a long-term impact-based vision is that, you know, we need to, I think, combat the inclination to think about the short-term view, like the next quarterly results or the next annual results. And it's hard for some of us sometimes because we might not have all the resources we'd like to have to, you know, even to just to get to the next short-term goal. But I find it personally helpful to think about thinking of a multi-year and multi-parameter view, but more of a long-term view, and focusing on the impact that following the long-term roadmap will make and planning for improvements along the way. So we're not going to get it 100% right the first time around. So for example, like it's really easy to focus on simply asking our suppliers to share a goal or data by a deadline. But if you think about it a little bit more long-term, it helps you to anticipate what your suppliers might need to be able to share that data or that goal and how you can help and what impact that has on your long-term plan if those elements are missing effectively. And I also talked about avoiding setting things up from scratch. We talk about and think about this a lot in this business because there's so many frameworks and standards and, I don't know, networks or tools or processes, you know, you name it. They already exist to help solve for sustainability and help solve for sustainable procurement specifically. But most of it can be used off the shelf as is to help your organization to make significant progress, but it's hard to connect the dots. And I guess my advice is, you know, there are communities of peers that can provide, you know, really valuable advice on where to find those existing solutions. And I wouldn't be shy to ask, because in my experience, these communities of peers do provide feedback willingly and provide some very good advice. Several industries have set up industry-specific initiatives to formally tackle the challenge head-on. And it's no secret that the industries where those initiatives are well-established are generally leading the pack. But, you know, I think we can all lead by example in our ways of working and reuse and recycle solutions that are already out there instead of standing at the stuff from scratch.
Now, you've explained how data and supplier engagement have been key challenges on your sustainable procurement journey. Looking ahead, how do you see emerging technologies like AI and machine learning help to address these challenges and enhance your efforts?
Yeah. So when I thought about emerging technologies, for me, this aligns to how machine learning, AI, and Gen AI can affect sustainable procurement. I personally needed to remind myself of the difference between those tools. For the benefit of the listeners, I would explain the difference as follows. So machine learning is teaching a machine how to perform a specific task and provide accurate results by looking at patterns, right? AI is then applying that pattern recognition and telling you what it sees as it interprets and analyzes the data. And ultimately, Gen AI is meant to be creating new patterns, meaning creating new content, generating new solutions. So it was really important for me to understand the difference between those three different things to talk about it today. And so many organizations have already begun using all of these technologies in their processes. Here at CBRE, machine learning and AI definitely have a well-established pace in our tech stack and our ecosystem. It provides us with the ability to analyze huge data sets that were simply unattainable through fully human-based analysis. So we're also using some Gen AI tools currently to help with collating research, editing, et cetera. So it's more like productivity-based. And we're working to feed our Gen AI tools with high-quality content. So we're looking at how we can use it more across our business and also use Gen AI externally to help our suppliers look at how they can be more efficient in the way they work. But honestly, my opinion on Gen AI is that I'm still waiting to see how it can provide us with unique and novel solutions. And what I mean here is that solutions that humans have not imagined yet. There's some fantastic programs out there like the MethaneSat satellite looks at methane leaks across the world, or the deforestation satellite. These are monitoring systems that were created by humans, but leveraging Gen AI. They weren't created by Gen AI, right? So in my opinion, I think there's a lot of human-based solutions that are being enriched by the automation tools. So I also tried to test this myself. I always like to test out my own theories. So I asked our own internal Gen AI chatbot the following question. I asked, how can Gen AI create new solutions to help CBRE tackle sustainable procurement challenges? And it was a very interesting response, because the response included suggestions that were absolutely logical and some were packaged interestingly, but I didn't think there was anything really unique and novel in there. The references that the Gen AI cited were based on, well-known consultancies content. And actually, funnily enough, it included some content that my own team had developed last year. So I think we're still at a stage where humans need to carefully train the tools that are available to us to accelerate the deployment of existing solutions to sustainable procurement challenges. So we need to be mindful of the environmental impacts that Gen AI may create as well. And just to conclude on that, I think that gaining access to new solutions for procurement, sustainable procurement that's been wholly generated by Gen AI, I think this is going to take some time still. And I would bank on more good old human collaboration to get there.
Thanks, Alexandra. What's next for CBRE on its sustainable procurement journey? Are there any new initiatives or goals that you're excited about as you continue to drive progress in this area?
So we've spent the last few years really looking heavily at database processes. And now we really see the need to switch our focus to more relationship-based and governance-based processes. So in speaking with my peers, I'm aware that many companies start with the other way around, like the governance and relationship-based process first, and then they see that their database processes need improvement. I don't think there's a right or wrong way to go about it. I think it's important to be mindful of where your organization is coming from and keeping your eye on both for the long-term plan. But switching this focus to governance and relationship-based for CBRE will mean strengthening internal and external sustainable procurement governance. So we'll need to continue to leverage those internal relationships. We'll need to establish some new ways of working in our network. Internally, it will mean, I think, further improving some of our management systems, some of our policies and procedures, roles and responsibilities across the business, so on and so forth. Externally, it will mean being able to really crucially differentiate between supplier willingness and supplier capability and adapt our relationship with the supplier accordingly. This is becoming really evident in the difference between willingness and capability. So I don't know, I think for the future, I'm trying to keep in mind, how can we continually improve, right? I think continuous improvement is the foundation of sustainability, right? So let's practice what we preach kind of thing, right? So I was looking at my social networks over the weekend, and one of my ex-colleagues, who I consider to be a very inspiring female supply chain leader, she reminded me that continuous improvement and ingenuity are concepts that we've valued in our business community for decades, right? And she was quoting some Japanese client that she's working with that has as a statement in their business, there are no bounds to improvement. And this reminded me that improvements and even small ones are born from the if you apply ingenuity to a solution, you get continuous improvement over time. She was defining ingenuity as being able to create unique and useful solutions in difficult situations. And I kind of feel like, some people might feel that sometimes in sustainability, we are faced with difficult situations. So I guess I would just kind of close by inviting, our sustainable procurement and sustainability community to continue pushing for this continuous improvement, leveraging ingenuity, and just kind of keep moving forwards and enable significant sustainability advances for our business and for our local communities. I mean, that's what gets me excited to continue working in this area of work.
That's a great vision, Alexandra, and I wish you all the very best on this journey. And thank you so much for your time today and for such an insightful and revealing discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. We hope you found it interesting, and we'd love if you could share it with your colleagues and leave a review. If you'd like to find out more about EcoVadis, please visit ecovadis.com.